Welcome to Disarming Persuasion, the podcast for sales and business leadership professionals. My name is Dave Rosenberg, and I am the founder and principal at Locked On Leadership, a consulting firm with a mission to replace Thank God It's Friday with Thank God It's Monday. With me is my co-host, a man who can literally teach sales with one hand tied behind his back, Darren Cecil. Darren, what are we going to discuss today?
Setting people up for success, Dave.
Setting up for success. Is success coming to dinner? What's that all about?
I don't know, but I've had some successful dinners in my day, so maybe. But I was thinking about, from a persuasion perspective, when we look at leadership and sales, what do we do to set people up so they will be successful, was my thought for today.
Why is it important, if we're talking about persuading people, to set them up for success?
Well, I think we talked in about another podcast about conflict resolution. We talked about creating maybe a win-win as one of the options. You want to create opportunities where people feel like they're going to be successful, to whether it's in work or in sales and in business relationships. We want to set those expectations up front so they can actually be successful and to do what they're able to do.
I think you're absolutely right. If what you're saying is by coming at it from a position of, I'm looking to help you be successful, people will be more inclined to listen to you, and makes persuasion easier. Mm-hmm. I think there's another aspect, especially when we talk about long-term relationships. So whether it's sales or leadership, clearly you're going to have a longer-term relationship. Sales, hopefully, we talk about that in transformational versus transactional. We're also looking for long-term relationships when you have a history of doing right by people, setting them up to be successful. They are going to be more inclined to listen to you or be persuaded by your position, knowing that the historical data says you have their best interests at heart.
That's absolutely brilliant. I would totally agree with that. Yes.
But have I ever told you, I love when you call me brilliant.
Did I call you brilliant, or did I say your statement was brilliant?
I'm really not going to split that hair. I don't have any to split.
Fair enough, my friend. Fair enough. I thought that what you just said was brilliant. And if you'd like me to say, Dave, you are brilliant, there it is. It's now recorded. You can play that anytime you want to.
Over and over again. I think it's going to be one of those affirmations I go to bed with.
Well, we'll leave that alone. So does that set you up for success when I'm looking at ways to give you opportunities that you can be better than you already are?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly acknowledging people when they do something really well is an aspect of setting people up for success. But I think we're talking about more than that, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you talked about once before, I think we were having lunch or something, you talked about some guy named Maslow and some hierarchy of needs. Can you share a little bit about that? I'm not very familiar with it. Or even if I am, I'll pretend that I'm not for this conversation.
Thank you. Because folks, Darren has an advanced degree in psychology, so if he does not know who Abraham Maslow is, and I had somebody actually pronounce it Maslov, and then I went online and I checked because I always called it Maslow, and I actually think I was wrong and it's Maslov because it's the WV sound. Who knows? At any rate, just thought I'd throw that little bit linguistic twist into this conversation. But anyone who thinks Darren doesn't know who Abraham Maslow is, well, you're mistaken. He absolutely does. Maslow was, and now I'm going back and forth with the pronunciation. So this is, okay, just whatever, go with it. He was a psychologist. He was a humanist. He was actually the founder of the humanist movement in psychology. And as a humanist, he was interested in normal human behavior as opposed to aberrant human behavior, i.e., you know, why people do messed up things like Freud or Jung were. You know, he's more interested in people are doing healthy behaviors and how you can replicate that. And his fascination was he recognized that there are a small group of people who get to do what they believe they were meant to do, what they were born to do, And he coined a phrase, they were self-actualized. And one to understand, why is it some people were self-actualized, but most of us were not. We simply do what we need to do to survive. And so Maslow's hierarchy was his theory on why that is.
That's great. Absolutely. And how does that relate to setting people up for success when you look at the various levels? Since most of us, you have set, obviously are self-actualized, but I am not. So how can we utilize that with persuasion and leadership and sales?
Good question. I'm curious. Sorry, I'm going to put you on the couch now. You said you're not self-actualized, so you're not doing what you feel you're meant to do in life?
Oh, no, I am. I'm very blessed and I'm very fortunate. I think that most people probably think they are, but when they hear the term self-actualized, they're like, no, I'm a long way from that. And they have their own head trash, if you will, around that. I think I'm called to do what I'm doing and I'm enjoying doing it, making differences in people's lives. Absolutely.
Okay. So then the question becomes, right, why isn't everybody doing what they're called to do, to use your language? I actually like that language, right? Because it really feels right to me what self-actualization means. And what Maslow said is that before we can actually even think about what we're called to do, before we can even acknowledge that we have this drive to do something, and that we first need to survive. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. And so Maslow's hierarchy, and I'll put this in the show notes so people can picture it in case you haven't seen it. But most people have. It's often depicted as a pyramid with five levels. Mm-hmm. And each level represents a need. That, and what Maslow said is that need must be substantially met. So it's not 100%, but substantially met before we even become aware of the subsequent need, the next level above. And the top level is self-actualization. So we have four major needs that have to be met before we even start to think about what is it I'm called to do. And most people are not living at the top. They're living someplace in the middle and some at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to, especially what's going on with what's been going on in our world in the past year or so, I would imagine, has that Maslow's hierarchy changed at all? Do you think people have gone down more based on what's going on in economically in our communities? I'm just curious what you think about that when you look at the bottom level and moving up.
So let's go through those four levels quickly. So the fifth level is self-actualization. So the bottom base level is physiological needs. And basically think of it as we need to eat. We need to live, right? So we need to eat. We need water. We need to take care of the things our body needs to carry on. And so what are they? We need food. We need water. Actually, we need in the opposite order. We need water first. We'll live about 3 days without it. Food, depending on where you are. First world countries like ours, we could probably go a long time without food. You know, the obesity of the United American people is scary, frankly. Mm-hmm. But most people in most circumstances probably don't have a week to 10 days worth of without eating before they're substantially gone, right? So we have to take care of that first. And if you stop and think for a second, if you were automatically or transported to the wilderness where there's no civilization, and I don't mean you walk 5 miles and you hit a road. I mean, you could walk 500 miles and not hit a road or a structure. It's pure wilderness. The clothes on your back. What do you start thinking? The only thing you're going to think about is where's my food going to come from and where am I going to get water? And hopefully, again, as I mentioned, water first.
Yep.
If you find a freshwater stream, and let's just assume for a second you find it bubbling out of the ground, so you're not even worried about what's in that stream. It's coming fresh right from the ground. You're not going to care about the dangers too much around that stream if it's drink that stream or die. Mm-hmm. So we're not even aware of the next level need, which is safety and security.
Right.
But since you found the stream, and because it's fresh water, there's plants growing around there, once again, you don't know what's edible or not, but you know you got to get food. So what do you start doing? You start nibbling on the plants, and you hope you pick the right plants. You pick one. If you're smart, you'll nibble on it, eat, and you go, roll the dice. And then it's like, okay, the next day it filled my belly and I have some energy and I didn't die. So now you're like, okay, this plant is safe. This water is safe. Now there's, you get tired of that plant. But all of a sudden you start thinking, but if I eat this other plant over here, that might make me sick. Mm-hmm. So you've just become aware of your safety and security need. That's the next level. Because now mm-hmm. all of a sudden it's like, okay, my survival isn't at, it's at stake, but it's, I have it substantially met. I can get by with the one plant for a little while. Mm-hmm. And so now our safety and security, that's a second level, takes over. And so instead of just eating the plant, maybe you put a little bit on your tongue. Does it burn? No. You nibble a little tiny bit and you go, do I have any adverse reaction? Then, and 2 hours, 3 hours later, a little bit more and go, no, right? And so eventually you decide, okay, this plant is safe. So now we're meeting our safety and security needs. And through that process and others like it, you go, okay, I fashioned some weapons. I've got a shelter where I could sleep at night without being attacked by night predators. Right? You start putting things in place that make you safer and secure. Well, what's next? That's a question for you, Darren. What's next? So you're out there. It's all by yourself. What's next?
Well, I've got my safety and security, mm-hmm. right? Now am I by myself? Am I trying to get a sense of belonging?
Right. And that's what right. So Maslow said, right. And so remember that movie, what was that Tom Hanks movie where he was stranded on an island? He was like, it was supposed to be like UPS. The plane went down.
Right. That's with Wilson, the volleyball.
Right. Castaway. Right. So what I just described, sort of Tom Hanks went through this in the beginning of the movie, right? He has to figure out how he's going to survive, food, water, right? Now, he had all the stuff from the plane with him, or a lot of it. He started gathering it up. But once he got himself somewhat secure there, right, his food and water and shelter, it's all that, his safety and security was met. He knew he wasn't going to die tomorrow. He got lonely.
Right.
And he took the soccer ball or whatever it was.
Volleyball.
Wilson, I knew was the name because he had his name on him, right? Mom pinned his name tag on him so people would call him by his right name. But he took markers and drew a face, right, and became a person to him, right? Because we have this need for love and belonging. We have a need to be part of a group. Now we're part of that group. Mm-hmm. What's your next concern? Because the group's important to you.
Group's very important to me. Gosh, I'm trying to think. First of all, I auditioned for Survivor.
You did not.
I did. I got a call back. You can watch it on YouTube. You can. It's my daughter asked me to do it. No prep whatsoever. And we got out of the car and recorded it and got a call back. And it was just talking about some crazy stuff in my life. But, you know, I am not a camper. My big thing is my body would be a buffet smorgasbord for every insect on that island. So I would not do well. So when you ask me, you know, what's next, I'm still thinking, I built my shelter, or I've got whatever that I have, then I've got belonging. Gosh, then I would want to look at, on an island, survival. I would look at long-term strategies just to incorporate my well-being, to try to be happy.
Because you want to stay as part of that group, right?
Oh, I need to, yeah. And I need to find other volleyballs if I only have one.
Well, that's it. But I mean, if you're actually were made into, if you were on the show Survivor.
Yes. Yeah, I need to develop relationships that are going to be beneficial that I can trust.
Not just that you can trust, but you want to make sure that your contribution to the group is acknowledged by the others so they don't kick you off the island.
That's true. That's very, right? Yes.
Right. I mean, I don't want to get too much into Survivor strategy. I don't actually watch the show. I've seen it enough to be familiar with it. But I imagine that there's one of two strategies, right? Let's kick off the big threats to us, but at the same time, not kick them off too soon if they're going to help our team.
That's right.
Right? So we kick off the right cola herd. We kick off the weak people first.
That's right.
Ensure survival of the team. And then as we start narrowing down, then we start getting rid of the competition, right?
Because
there can be only one Highlander, actually. Another great movie, folks, by the way, if you haven't seen the original Highlander. Sean Connery. I can't think of the main character's actor's name, but at any rate. So the next level is esteem. Mm. And people think of esteem as self-esteem because of all the, you know, feel-good psychology of today, but it's not self-esteem. Maslow didn't postulate we have to feel good about ourselves. That's actually the next level, right? That self-actualization, doing what we want, will make us feel good about ourselves. But are we held in esteem by the other members of the group that we now belong to? Because if we're contributing to the group, they will recognize our contribution. That's what the esteem is. And now our position in that group is secure. And I should have pointed this out earlier, but every subsequent level supports the one below it. So right. we're by ourselves, we get food and water, and now we go, okay, we need to meet our safety needs. Well, think about it. The safer we are, right? If we're not injured, forget about death for a second. If we're not injured, we're better able to then meet our physiological needs. So safety and security supports that. Mm-hmm. We then need love and belonging, and we belong to a group. And let's, again, not a group of volleyballs, but we get other humans now. There is, fill in the blank, there is blank in numbers.
Right.
Security. Safety in numbers. Mm-hmm. Right. So by being part of a group, now we're able to protect ourselves. We can divvy the workload up, which means I don't have to necessarily hunt when I'm doing something else. Or if I'm, you know, I am sick or injured, other people are hunting for me or gathering food for me, right? There's safety numbers. Our survival is better assured. Obviously, if we're part of the group, our contribution needs to be recognized to assure our position in that group. So esteem then allows us to stay in the group, which allows us to be safe and secure, which allows us to survive. So that's Maslow's hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And then, and only then, Maslow postulated, do we look internally and go, you know what? I'm alive. I'm being held in esteem. I'm part of this nice group here. I'm pretty safe and secure. What do I want to do for me to make me happy now that I'm alive and my survival is assured? That's the theory. Mm-hmm. What does this have to do with setting people up for success?
Well, I think some companies, organizations either go to, we're going to build esteem from the very beginning, or they go to, you know what, I hope you make it. I mean, old school sale was old school. Here's a phone book. Start dialing for dollars. I hope you make it. And there's some institutions, financial institutions in the past, that would hire so many people knowing only 15% would survive. And right. And the thought is, if you make it, that's great. If you don't make it, you're still going to sell your family and friends, and we're going to take the money from when you sold that. So it's meaning understanding where people are at. Some go, you know what, we're going to build you up, we're going to do all these wonderful things. And then there are other people that, like, very bottom, they're like, I hope you make it, and good luck. So it's understanding where people are at on the various levels of Maslow's hierarchy would be really helpful. And I think a lot of times organizations in sales and in leadership don't understand that concept.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, we have to take a page from Dr. Stephen Covey's book, Start with the End in Mind, right? I believe he's the one credited with saying that. Yeah. So what is our ultimate goal in leadership? My theory, right? So this is what I talk about in my book, Locked on Leadership, is that we have a separate leadership strategy that's different than our business strategy. So business strategy is, how do we grow our market share?
Yep.
A leadership strategy is, how do we grow our people as individuals? Mm-hmm. I postulate, and I've always done this initially, probably less purposefully, Not probably, initially less purposefully than now, right? Because when I first started out, I just did what I thought I wanted, right? As a leader, I acted the way I would want my leaders to act. Mm-hmm. So if we had a team, imagine this for a second, your team, the people who worked with you, every single one of them believed that what they were doing was, they had a calling to do.
Right.
They were meant to do it. It's what right. They were born to do.
Absolutely.
What does that team look like, right? It's a powerful team.
Absolutely.
If that's the vision you have of your team, then your strategy as a leader should be, how do I create the conditions to allow people to be self-actualized? And so setting people up for success is doing just that.
Right? Yeah. And a lot of times companies and organizations don't do that.
Well, I don't think they're aware.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, they have no idea. So they're either like, okay, we're going to make everyone self-actualized without the steps to get there, because they are. They're like, well, just do what I do, right? Or they just say from the very bottom, it's just, I don't really care about you. I don't really care about these lower needs. Hopefully you'll make it up to the top on your own. And when you get to a certain level, then we'll start looking at how we can support you to get even higher.
I'm not even sure. I think so for most companies, the self-actualization piece, it's a crapshoot. They're not trying for it. They don't care. They haven't acknowledged that. They're just, I'm trying to hire good people who are good, skilled at what they do.
That's right. Right? Yeah.
And the problem is the culture of that organization may not be a good fit. So even though you hire a competitor, a top performer from one of your competitors where the culture is different, and all of a sudden they don't perform well for you, and you think, was it all hype?
Right.
No, it's a different environment.
That's right.
And we're going to thrive. You take a plant that's meant for the desert and put it up in the Catskills, it's probably not going to survive.
I agree. Well, and Kurt Lewin said behavior is fit times environment. That's what you're talking about. Right. People behave based on the fit times their environment they're in.
Right. And so what's their personal fit? What is it they want to do? And then you put it in an environment where they will flourish.
Right.
A friend of mine went out to camping last week in the Joshua Tree, which those of you not familiar with Southern California, Joshua Tree Park, I think it's a national park in Southern California where the Joshua Tree grows. The Joshua Tree will only grow in a very small ecological geographical area, a certain altitude. I don't remember all the details, right? But you're not going to find it in the Alps. You're not going to find it in the tropics. You're not going to find it in Northern California. You're going to find it in Joshua Tree, I believe, Park. I can't remember, National State Park. Yep. People will flourish in the right environment. And that's what he was talking about. When you set people up for success, it starts with hiring people that are going to flourish in your environment.
That's right. Absolutely.
What about from sales? So, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Maslow's hierarchy. How does that apply to, as a salesperson, trying to persuade prospects that your solution is the right one for them?
Well, I think it's important to figure out, if you can, do a quick inventory to find out where that prospect might be on that hierarchy.
If, now,
go ahead.
Are you talking about where they are personally, or are you talking about where whatever need, right? Because people bring you in a sales situation for a perceived need. We've talked about this before. That's not necessarily their actual need, but it's their self-identified, what we call surface. You and I have talked about before, their surface level need. But you're talking about, did that need come from a different spot on the hierarchy?
I think it's the need. It's the need. Also, as you're progressing through the conversation, if you're speaking with a business owner, for some, it's a meshed. It's both for some, right? So I think we talked about this in a previous podcast, ABQ, always be questioning. By the questions that you ask, you're going to figure out more about that need. And I'm going to change that word. I like the word pain better rather than need, because I know a lot of people that don't stop behaviors that should be stopping behaviors, right? They need to do things they don't. So I'm going to say pain just because I like it, right? And
I'm sorry. Did you just tell all our listeners you like pain?
I prefer, that's a great point. I was going to do a podcast with a gentleman years ago called S&M, Sales and Marketing, but I don't think that people would really appreciate the title. So we'll leave it at that. Sales and Marketing, S&M. But my thought is I'm more comfortable with the term pain, because people change behavior based on a compelling emotional reason, which to me is pain. So if that makes sense, we good on that?
Yeah, I would modify that a little bit. Pain is one of the two and only two reasons.
That's
True. That people change behaviors. It is the more powerful of the two.
Correct. Pleasure is the other, but from a sales perspective, people don't typically invite me in because they want to increase pleasure. They may think it, but it's also the pain that's the underlying challenge. So it's the most.
I would agree with that. There's been a huge amount of studies that basically prove that pain or loss is at a minimum twice as compelling as gain or pleasure.
Right. Absolutely. So once we figure out their pain, then we can get a sense of where they're at as far as on the hierarchy. And from a sales perspective, if I know someone, a company is doing extremely well and they think they're self-actualized, right? They think that's where they're at. Sometimes I have to bring them back down to reality. And so I'll say things like this, Dave, let's pretend we evaluate your organization, your company, and we find out you're the biggest challenge within that company. How would you like for me to have that conversation? Those are some unique questions to ask to figure out where someone actually is. And you know one of the organizations that I actually asked that question to.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think you're referring to an organization we were both mutually associated with 10 years ago.
Perhaps that is accurate, yes. And so once when I ask these questions, I can figure out where people are at. So if someone is, if they're in the lower level, they're like, you know, I'm just trying to get water. I'm trying to get water. I'm trying to get food. To me, that's an organization that might just be starting out.
So what's that look like? I mean, in real life, I mean, it's great to say, okay, they're trying to get water, trying to get food. They're at the physiological need level, but they don't say that to you. What do they actually say? So our listeners out there who are maybe in the sales world might be able to translate that into their world.
Well, if I'm coming into a company, it's just, we've just started where we've got some funding, we're trying to figure things out. To me, that's a whole different conversation with a company that's been around for 10 years and they're trying to grow. So that as far as the stages of the organization are really helpful to figure out, then the pains are going to be different. The solutions may be the same, but the pains are going to be different. And so trying to figure out where a company is, like for me, stages of an organization is really helpful. That's one. I want to know from my perspective, I want to know about training. What type of training are they currently doing for their employees that's going to help them get to where they want to go? And that's telling for me. That goes back to the culture, which we talked about in a previous cast, right? Previous podcast talking about culture.
So training, to me, that really resonates as a way of setting people up for success, right? Exactly. Our whole concept here. Training, to me, lives right at that safety and security level, at the heart of it. Because when we train people, what we're telling them, well, there's a lot of good things that go on there, of course, but when we actually take the time with formal training and show people how to be successful, that's what training is. How do you be successful? You're setting people up for success. I will address this for me. I often say, in fact, this is one of my major points, is the training needs to be formal, syllabus-based training, skills-based training that builds on itself, as opposed to what I call tribal training, which is follow me and do what I do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, skill-based.
How does the formal training set people up for success where the tribal training actually, in my estimation, sets them up for failure?
Well, if I'm understanding it correctly, the formal training, there's systems and processes put in place, and you can follow the system. The tribal training is, I'm really good at what I do, so just do what I do. So, you know, as you know, I played sports growing up. I could never have someone that could mentor me in sports because I played with one hand. So I really couldn't even follow what they did if I wanted to, right? And so for me, if I found someone that had a system and structure put in place to be more effective, that is extremely beneficial for anyone. And you can replicate that system. If you do, go ahead.
So I want to take that sports analogy because I think this is a great example. Let's just swap it around so I think it drives the point home really well.
Please.
You were, as memory recalls, a pretty good basketball player.
Basketball and baseball. Yep.
Right. So in basketball, and I suck at basketball, okay, if you wanted to teach me to shoot and you just said, do what I do, right?
Right.
Right. I mean, I'd be stumped.
Right.
Because.
Yeah, it's important not to let the left hand know what the right hand is doing. Do we want to have this conversation?
Right. Well, we've only gone through this a lot over the last decade or so. Right? But the point being, because of your lack of arm, your shooting technique is not one I could emulate.
Totally different.
Without a hacksaw. Totally. And a lot of pain.
Totally. Yeah, it's not worth it. It's not worth it.
I agree.
Right. Absolutely. And so when I coached kids in baseball and basketball, I would have to say, yeah, I know I'm going to do it a different way. This is the way you want to do it. This is the structure put in place.
Right. Or you found somebody who did it the right way and said, demonstrate this for me. Right.
Correct.
Here's how you make sure your elbow is whatever it is. I'm not a basketball player. So setting people up for success, training is huge, whether it's in sales or any position really within an organization. Setting your prospects up for success, which potentially also, by the way, could mean training them on your product or service.
Absolutely.
Right. How many times have you bought something and the instruction manual didn't exist, was a bad translation from a foreign language, right? Or it was incomplete or inaccurate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you don't have children, but the term some assembly required around the holidays starts, most parents start sweating. So yes, I can definitely appreciate what you speak of that. Absolutely.
Well, remember, I don't have children. That doesn't mean I'm not one.
Point well taken. Yeah, I didn't want to go there, but you did. So fair enough. I should have known based on the previous comments you've said today. So absolutely. Good point. My apologies. I'm trying to set you up for success by telling you how good you are and you're dragging yourself down, which caused me to bring you up even higher. So well done on that.
You know, I've learned from the best.
what was that again?
I've learned from the best.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Would you like me to introduce you to them?
Yes.
any rate. So if people are trying to learn how to do this better for you, how can they do that?
To be more successful?
Let's say they're having some sales challenges and they'd like to be more successful in their efforts.
Sure. If it's an individual or a company, what I would suggest is they can contact me when you would sit down and have a conversation to find out where those challenges are and then how to close the gap where they want to be. And a lot of times, let's face it, salespeople are not adequately trained in sales. They might be given some presentation skills training, which to me doesn't make a lot of sense because that puts too much pressure on the prospect and also the salesperson. So much takes place before the presentation and really having a conversation to find out their methodology, even if their methodology is fly by to the seat of their pants. That's really important to know. Or I'm going to just go off what the prospect is doing, which means, you know, everybody has a plan. The question is it your plan that you want to live by or you want to live by their plan? But everybody has a plan, right? And so my thing is sit down, have a conversation, find out their methodology. We look at behavior, attitude, and technique. And it's not just technique on how to sell, but it's, you know, good behavior produces good results. And it's also then the attitude, not the rah, rah, rah stuff that people really enjoy that for me lasts as long as I'm motivated, I'm excited, and I drive up the freeway and someone cuts me off and freezes and flips me off. That same motivation is not there right now. So it's understanding some head stuff, which will really change my attitude permanently, not something that's a quick fix. So we look at behavior, attitude, and technique. The very first thing would be to reach out and have a conversation to see if there's a good fit. Because like you said in a previous podcast, we're not for everybody. The only way to find out is to have a conversation.
And how do you want them to reach out to you?
Well, they could just reach out through the podcast, or I will put in the show notes the best way to reach out to me.
Perfect. All right. Well, I think this has been a great show, Darren.
Thank you, sir. As always, I've learned a lot from you and about you.
And likewise. And folks, if you have any questions on anything specific, let us know. all our contact information is in the show notes, web pages, social media links, smoke signal preferred time of day. You know, if you happen to be in the right part of the world and we can see it. So if you need to contact us, go through the show notes, DarrenCecil.com or LockedOnLeadership.com. Those web pages are in there as well. Otherwise, we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Darren.
That concludes another episode of Disarming Persuasion. My name's Dave Rosenberg.
And this is Darren Cecil.
Visit our websites at LockedOnLeadership.com or DarrenCecil.com. Follow us on social media. You can find the links in the show notes. Remember, if they fail to make a decision, you failed to disarm them.